We Talk Podcasts is now proudly presented by Geek Nation Tours. The zombie apocalypse is imminent. Could you survive? You'll have a better chance after completing Geek Nation Tours Zombie Apocalypse Training 101. Learn to fire weapons, scrounge for food, and actually run from zombies. The time of the geek is at hand. Geek Nation Tours provides fun and unique vacation packages featuring themes such as the Civil War, Harry Potter, board games and beer, sports geeks, in locations such as Germany, Japan, England, and all over America. Visit geeknationtours.com and get your geek on.
Hey, yo, and here we go. It is We Talk Comics, the rebirth episode. And we are going to be talking about DC's mysterious rebirth of something that's coming up in May or June. Is it an event? Is it a relaunch? Is it a reboot? No one really knows yet. But to celebrate what is probably DC starting all of their books from number one again, We Talk Comics is restoring legacy numbering. We have done many episodes, some of them numbered, some of them not numbered. This episode, legacy numbering, number 200, our 200th anniversary. Mo, what do you think looking back on the 200th anniversary of We Talk Comics?
First off, I just want to say, what's up, babies? And 200 of these. It is 200 now. As you say, this is a legacy number. Now, the nice part is, next episode, we'll go back to 142 or whatever it would be. Most likely. But, yeah, we've been doing this. It's really weird. This is the 200th. This literally is our 200th episode. And Brett's not here. But if we're going to have somebody who's going to replace Brett, I'm so happy it's going to be Matt. It's 200 episodes. It's weird because when we launched all that time ago, DC was just announcing that they were about to do this new 52 thing. And so it really feels full circle. So I think it's perfect. I'm really looking forward to this episode. This episode is just going to be a lot of really good comic talk. And this is going to be great.
Chris?
You know, I'm ecstatic. I'm Chris, by the way. And 200 episodes. I didn't think we'd get to issue episode 10. So this is fantastic. And Mo, I'm a little creeped out and discovered a reason why you're not married right now. I think that baby's comment might be it. You're creeping people out, man. That was just scary.
What's up, babies?
Yeah, don't do that, man. You will never get laid using that line.
Not with ladies.
Hey, it's been a while. I'll take whatever. How are you, Matt? Let's say that this handsome devil, Matt Centauri Griffith, is sitting here ready to class up the joint.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I have to say that the legacy numbering was a surprise to me. And so to be featured on the 200th episode, you know, like that feature, but to be a guest star on the 200th episode, I feel like Ms. Marvel in an Avengers annual or like something like real big. Like,
let's actually wow, take time here, Matt. Let's take a little time to why don't you tell us about what We Talk Comics means to you after 200 episodes? And if you want to spend some time particularly putting me over as being terrific, I don't mind.
Well, let's see. What has We Talk Comics meant to me? There have been a lot of episodes that have been a lot of fun. A lot of really good, thoughtful stuff. Of course, you know, as co-owner of Comicosity, and I know I speak for Aaron Long as well, we're exceptionally proud to be associated with you guys and to promote your podcast as well. You know, it's something that's we feel really strongly about, and we really adore you.
We've pissed you off a couple times.
In the course of 200 episodes, I've also been super pissed off, particularly by you, Mo. But, you know, that's mostly water under the bridge. I have to say that I'm like I said, I'm very proud to be on episode 200. But I will say that there's no way I'll continue collecting after 201. So unless you go back to number one, it's over.
Yeah, I do like that it's mostly water under the bridge, meaning there's just a little bit that's going to sit there bubbling under the surface forever.
It's strange getting to episode 200. I mean, we watched these numbers ticking up quietly. We were going to do this at number 100 and then just blew past it without noticing. We again considered it 150 and then, you know, forgot about it again. So for a show that I insisted on not being called a co-host for like about like 10 episodes, that I wanted to be called the guest. You know, all the cool guests we've had on, all of the creators, all of the other pundits. It's been really interesting and kept me interested in comics through all the ups and downs of the past 4.5 years of the industry.
Yeah. So, we truthfully, 200 episodes, but Keith, we're just getting started. We got so much stuff lined up here. It's going to be just insane. And there's certain episodes that I can look back at, certain interviews or certain, just things. Like, I mean, I couldn't be prouder of this last summit, Creator Summit. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to any of it, Matt. But I could not be prouder of getting together 20-plus people creating comic books in a room, talking their experiences all at once. I mean, that's such a new, unique thing. I am a little sorry for those of you who are iTunes subscribers and stuff. Last episode, you would have gotten a double because it was the wrong episode on the link for a little while, the Nostradamus. And instead, it was the double take. I think it was the audio for a little while. I fixed that. So I know that episode actually hasn't had as many listens as a prediction show usually has. So if you're listening to this one, yeah, that's fixed. You can go in. That the episode is there. Please listen to it. It was a good episode last time. We had, I think every one of my predictions has already come true, right, Keith?
More or less, yeah. It
helps that you were predicting things that had already happened.
Yeah, that was my strategy.
Yeah, I think you are ahead on
points
predicting things that already happened.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
You're welcome.
Mo was Brett was a close second, but but still, like I think you were ahead there.
I'll be lucky to get a point by the end of the year.
We're apropos of what we're talking about. We are still waiting to find out whether whatever Rebirth is hashtag Rebirth from DC, if it is a reboot or a relaunch. We have made predictions on that, and we'll find out soon enough who gets the points.
But do you want me to take over here, kind of, Keith?
Yeah, I think you have a concept of where you want to go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like I say, I just want to do some good comic talk here. I mean, one of the things is obviously is this DC when it relaunched, with the new 52 had great momentum. And obviously that's waned. What do you think? What do you guys think, or do you guys know what the company thinks is the reason why the momentum hasn't stayed? And I mean, if you look at the top 50 books right now, I think there's only something like from December of 2015. I think there's only, you know, something like 8 or something like that from DC in there. You know, and there was 20 plus from Marvel. And what do you think this is kind of the reason why it's ultimately not being as successful as they hoped?
Well, I can speak to that. And part of it is mathematics. So, and then part of it is just the nature of relaunching. So actually DC sales have just simply been flat over the last few years. They have not waned. The reason why they're not in the lower or they're lower on the sales chart is because the sales chart are relative numbers. So if you're looking at a comic market that is actually going up in amounts of dollars, which it has every year, I think this year it was, what, somewhere between 7 and 13% higher than the previous year.
Mm-hmm. I think 11% at least for December when I looked. Yeah.
So DC has a smaller proportion of that money, but actually more or the same amount of dollars. So, but why are they not getting as much of the share, which is a relative, not hard number issue, I think has a lot to do with relaunching. You know, they tried to do a half-line relaunch last June, but they focused a lot on books that are probably going to have much more success in the bookstore market as opposed to the direct market, which is controlled by a lot of assholes. not all. My shop is absolutely wonderful, and I love them, and they hand sell, they stand behind all of their books, indie, kids books, DC, Marvel, they're really great. But I've heard way too many shops that are not like that. And when, you know, when you don't, and I do think that there's something to be said for not putting number ones behind your big ticket items. Marvel did that and they've seen a sales spike. But they also see a heavy drop-off, most of the time up to 70% between the first and the second issue. So it's, you know, it's a very strange market, and a lot of it is perception and a lot of it is fact. But, you know, I think actually if you had to put your finger on one reason why DC's market share is less than it used to be, it's Star Wars.
I think there's something to that for sure. If you look at the top sales of Star Wars books, I think they have 4 in the top 50 or 5 in the top 50. So, yeah, that means a lot.
Yeah, and they're big numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think there's a lot to that. But if you look back at 2009, DC had 30% of the market. Now they have 29%. I mean, after the new 52 launched, they were for a while there neck and neck with Marvel. They were both looking at 36. Sure. 36-37%, and I think the hope was for them was they could maintain that or even overtake Marvel. And for a while there, they were kind of back and forth. You didn't know who was going to be ahead. And Marvel has their own issues, there's no question, and that's not really what we're focusing on this time. But there's no question, both in their sales, and even though they're 42% of the market, you know, the amount of books they're putting out and everything, that, like you said, when it's relative to the amount of product that they're distributing. So, I mean, it's not – like, they have their own problems both – and also creatively. Like, you know, I mean, they really do. But, yeah, we're kind of focusing a little bit on the DC. So
the only thing I want to clarify is I don't know that DC's hope with the new 52 was to take market share. It was to drive bigger revenue.
Mm.
And that is – there's a distinct difference between those two things from a profit-loss standpoint.
That's true.
I'm just looking at some stats. You're talking about the size of the market. The vital stats on Comics Chronicles website, we always pull our sales figures from. December was up 8% from the previous year, 29% from 5 years earlier. Mm-hmm. So it's hugely different than it was, you know, a year before New 52. This market is massive, is so much more, so much bigger than it was in, you know, end of 2010.
And yet, is that because of the New 52 or isn't it? Is it more because of the raised awareness for the products from all the television shows and movies and this type of thing? Is it, what is, I mean, you know?
I think it's a... Go ahead, Matt.
I don't believe that the TV shows and the movies have any effect.
Oh, it has some. Not as much as I'd like, but it has some.
Really? Can you show me data that proves that?
Nothing beyond my own discussions with people. But it has. Yeah.
I don't believe it. I've never seen any individual project in the diamond market get bigger sales after a movie or any other TV push.
Really? Guardians of the Galaxy doesn't count for you?
No, because Guardians of the Galaxy, the books didn't sell more after the movie. They started publishing more books.
Guardians, I would argue with you because I don't think you run five of the, I don't think those five books worked would ever have sold anything.
Yeah.
Before the movie,
they wouldn't have done five books before the movie.
Well, yeah, but that's the point. I mean, you can't sell Groot before the movie, so the movie had an effect.
Effect. I don't know that it had a direct sales effect.
Do I think? I think it did, but it doesn't get outside of current readers. It's getting very few people that aren't already comic readers. What it gets is
that didn't have a sales effect.
You get, you know, comic guy that buys Superman, starts watching the Flash TV show, and starts getting the Flash comic. That's where the sales boost comes from. It doesn't come from person who's never read comics, watches the Flash TV show.
I think you're right there, Keith. Yeah,
it's still not getting outside the hug.
No.
Yeah, and I think that we're just talking semantics then, because I don't see those as direct effects. I see them as running through creative and then having an effect. So it's just a different, there's an extra layer of factors there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Star Wars is probably a little bit different.
The toast is ready.
Because because clearly Star Wars is not just selling to the regular, unless every person on Earth who ever bought a comic is buying Star Wars, because those are selling like hotcakes.
And you know what? They weren't selling to regular comic readers ever, though. I mean, as somebody who owned a store in the 90s, I can tell you the people that were buying Star Wars back then did not buy any other books.
Oh, that's interesting.
And that was
actually,
the same
I
case.
Believe I had death threats on my file if you even went near my file with a Star Wars comic
book. No, there was no crossover. And Keith,
oh, no. I didn't want those things anywhere near that. Yeah. My good books.
And Keith could probably say the same thing, because he ran a store with a comic section for years, too. I mean, there was the crossover between those readers wasn't there then. And also when Dark Horse had it, the crossover wasn't there. And Dark Horse, I know from talking to people there that they would say that too. And Dark Horse's market share hasn't fallen as much as people would have expected. But a lot of that is that those readers have always been just Star Wars readers. They have no interest in Spider-Man. Maybe there's a little bit more because there's higher visibility with Marvel, but that's never been the case.
Yeah, and you see it with a lot of the properties, a lot of the ones that are coming from, because there's two different kinds of these tie-ins. There's Star Wars coming to comics, and then there's comics going to the movies. You see that with Buffy as well. People that just, that's all they're getting. They're not interested in anything else. Yeah, you're going to see that with any of the licensed X-Files and Doctor Who, that's all they're interested in doing. Because they want more of that thing. They don't want more comics.
Sure.
But anyways, back to the DC. What... okay, so what is it though that they you think that they could have approached differently that would have been more successful though? What is it you think what are some errors you think they may have made that now you can look back and say, okay, they could have adjusted this, they could have adjusted that since the new 52 is launched?
I think that DCU was trying to do a lot all at once. They were trying to do a lot in 1 month, not even just a short time, in a few months, like, you know, all new Marvel Now. They were doing all it all Marvel at once. Oh. All new, so, all different. Super duper, you haven't seen nothing yet, Marvel. I don't know what they call it now. It was everything all in a small period of time. And a lot of the stuff was... On the idea of if you build it, they will come. And they didn't come. That's really what it came down to. They're just, you and this market doesn't support a year of loss. It doesn't support trying something for 12 to 18 months. You've got three. And they knew before anything was on the shelf that there was a problem. Because of the way that the direct market works with the final orders. I mean, the final orders were a month before those issues were even on the shelf. I just think it was reach. It was an overreach to me. I think it was a bold overreach. I think it was an overreach along the scale and the and what will eventually be remembered like the DC explosion. But I think it was a lot to do at once.
To me, there was a lot of lack of excitement with because when they did introduce new books, they'd introduce four or five of them. And I didn't have time to get excited about one particular book. The exception being this Dark Knight. It was launched by itself, and you were able to look forward to it. There wasn't a lot of Earth before the New 52. They launched Earth One. Marvel has done a bunch of stuff that you could look forward to. But when DC does it, it always seemed to be, oh, there's a whole new slate. And I was already going, okay, that one's going to get canceled. That one's going to get canceled. That one might stick around.
That's an issue. Yeah.
I want to be excited about creative teams. And quite frankly, a lot of times the creative teams weren't really announced at the time and change constantly right now at DC. That's what I think a lot of their downfall could be, at least from a reader's point of view.
I mean, I actually have a slightly different take. I think that the key problem behind their sales coming out of DCU is that they didn't put more into their core characters as well as the other characters. So you had a Superman that looked radically different than what anyone has done before. With a cross all titles storyline that people were not that thrilled about. And that had been a despite the critical or the criticism from fans, that had actually been a strong seller beforehand. Not a top seller, but a strong seller.
It was consistent for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And it dropped. You took Bruce Wayne out of Batman. And to be fair, super heavy, the story that Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo are telling is genius. But it's still a perception issue when you combine that with taking Green Lantern away from the core and giving him long hair and putting him in a trench coat and putting Wonder Woman in a crazy outfit by a terrible creative team. That, you know, I mean, you have a confluence of their core characters and losing the issues there. But you know, so when you launch, when you have a slate of books, you know, and Marvel knows this too, that you're going to have the ones that do really, really, really well, and the ones that are going to squeak at the bottom, but are going to be creatively fulfilling for you as a line. DC didn't have enough at the one end. And so you have a book like Midnighter, which I've talked to a lot of people inside DC, and it is literally everyone's favorite book. From the top down, everyone in that company loves that book, and the critics all love it, and it sells like shit because the store owners refuse to purchase it mm-hmm. and promote it. My store owners hand sell. I mean, they literally, I don't go in there without them trying to sell something to me, and they do it to every person who walks through their door. Because they push for things that are creatively great. A lot of store owners don't bother doing that. You know, you have a book like Black Canary, which did okay, but early reports show that the bookstore orders are phenomenal. They're as good as, if not better than Batgirl. You know, and then but DC predicated a lot of, you know, their hopes on the model that they had with Gotham Academy, which, you know, does not sell very well at the direct market, and it doesn't matter. But I think that they got very impatient very quickly. And to be fair, some of the books from DCU are not going to do as well as those books that I just mentioned, because they're just not right for that demographic. I don't see that Martian Manhunter is going to do appreciably better in a bookstore than it does in a comic store. It's not that it's not a great book. It's just, I don't see the draw. He doesn't have name recognition. He doesn't, you know, It's not going to stand out in the same way.
I think. Oh, go ahead. Please go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I think you've hit upon for me one of the two big issues for DC, as far as I'm concerned, and one of them is exactly that, is that they have a character like Martian Manhunter, or even a character like Aquaman. You know, these great characters, and when put in the right setting, you know, in a Justice League book or even a Justice League Unlimited cartoon, that type of thing, they have all these great characters. When they get a little bit of spotlight, they make this great, grand, you know, masterpiece of a universe with all these unique characters, and it's but the ability for the characters to one-on-one connect long term. I mean, Aquaman, after 60 years, has never been... He's important in the DC universe. He's known to the readers. He's never been a popular enough character to be a top seller within the readers. So it's like you have a lot of those type of characters. Martian Manhunter. You know, I think Wonder Woman, even to some degree. These are the characters that are really important and make that universe unique and give it its breadth and its depth and everything. But they're not characters that are strong at carrying their own. They don't connect one-on-one with the reading audience. I mean, I think the characters that do are very limited. I mean, not even the Big Seven within the Justice League. I mean, it's Superman, Batman, Flash, Green Lantern. Those are the four that have been able to connect long-term with the readers. And that's Marvel is fortunate enough to have a lot more characters that connect in that way. And I don't think after 60 years you can change this for Aquaman. I don't see any way. You might get a creative team that gives a bump to the character, or maybe two for a while, but you never be able to create once you take that team away, that character's sales will go back down, because the character himself will never connect in the same way as Batman or Spider-Man or Captain America or any of these characters or X-Men. And this is, I think, something that, what do you do? Because you can't get rid of these characters. They're important, but you haven't got enough to highlight. And how do you create new ones in this day and age? I just think I think that's a quandary.
Well, I think to some degree, as someone who's a little outside the bubble on Marvel growing up, I think it's a little much to say that Iron Man and Captain America were as popular as Spider-Man and the X-Men.
They're not. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying they connect more than Martian Manhunter or Our Man, or, you know, there's just more characters that connect at a higher level.
I'll say that an Aquaman movie might turn the tables for Aquaman. The Wonder Woman movie will very likely turn the tables for Wonder Woman, as long as they're good movies, because that's what happened with Iron Man. But yes, they're not there right now. Right now they have basically, you know, three really big characters. And maybe you can extend that to Flash and Green Lantern too, but they have Superman, they have Batman, and they have Harley Quinn.
Yeah. And I think I just want to go back a step, Matt, what you were saying about what they did with the core line in DCU. They did two things that to me were the missteps, because it's been said quite a lot that where Batman and Superman's sales went down is the real problem.
Yeah.
And with DCU, because they always knew there was going to be a couple of surprise successes, a couple of middle performers, and a couple of, well, we threw something at the wall. And you get four or six issues out of it. Hopefully you do six so that you can slap it in a trade. Mm-hmm. And that's always going to be the way with these launches.
It's the same with Marvel.
Yeah, it's the same with Marvel for sure. There's going to be stuff that doesn't connect. And that's just the way it goes. I think a lot of the core characters felt like change for change's sake. Particularly Green Lantern to me.
Oh my God, yes.
That it was entirely about, we need to make it really different so that it looks really, really different, so it goes with this whole idea of different, as opposed to, I don't like the word organic, because I mean, it's you're telling your creative team to start to start from a jumping on point. So no matter what you do, it's inorganic. Because you're telling them that, like, it's a starting point and it's going to be in June. There's nothing organic about that, but it was just a sudden jump. It was suddenly these characters aren't that recognizable. And the second part is that at the same time, the flagship title Justice League didn't have any of those versions of the character, doesn't take place at the same time, and is like in a 1-year storyline that was absolutely disconnected from the entire rest of the universe.
And you know what? Out of all of those books that you just that we've been talking about, all the main core hero books, the only one besides Batman that I've been buying is Justice League.
And you know, go ahead.
And I've not been buying any of those other books.
And you know, I can tell you that I stayed with Green Lantern. I've been reading Green Lantern, and one of the reasons why I liked Green Lantern was I didn't feel the big jump. The continuity that was already existing, pre-existing in Green Lantern, largely stayed the same. I wasn't sitting there going, oh, when did that event happen, or when did that happen? The same way I was with Superman when they're going, he died. And I'm like, when did he die? I felt that the jump on, you see, I don't understand really that perception with Green Lantern. I thought of all the series of that was the easiest one for an old reader to continue with without feeling quite seamless.
Yeah, see, as someone who had been reading Green Lantern until then, I just didn't like the aesthetic. I didn't think that the story felt like Green Lantern anymore. It felt like some other character.
And whereas I continued reading it the whole time, was reading it before, read it through, and felt that the jump, and that's interesting that we had completely different perceptions on it.
Superman didn't die. He became powerless.
Right.
Batman died. Bruce Wayne died.
Yeah.
For
a minute.
Yeah. All I can tell you is when I was reading those early issues, they referenced Superman's death.
Yeah, I don't think so.
No? Which issues? And you mean?
Oh, jeez, Keith, you were asking me. I remember.
Do you mean June last year?
No. I'm talking about when DC relaunched. There was a reference in the New 52 early on.
Okay.
In the
you're jumping like 3 years difference here from what we were talking about on Green Lantern and what you're talking about on
Superman. We were talking DCU.
We're talking about June of 2015, and you suddenly jumped around then. That's why I got confused.
Okay. And you're talking about then the Green Lantern. You're talking about the shift to the Green Lantern with the robe and the long hair?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I thought you were talking about since the beginning. About the recent.
Oh yeah, there was absolutely no shift there.
Oh, that okay. Yeah, the recent. Oh yeah, that's different, but I love it. So.
Well, okay. You're a big fan of Rob's work, so.
Yeah. Well, actually, and you know what? While I say that, I don't really, and I mean, as big a fan as I am of Rob and a great guy as he is, and as much as I enjoy the Green Lantern, the Flash for me has not clicked. So. You know, you never know, right? Maybe that's Van Jansen and the way they write it, it's just not clicking for me in the same way.
So if you look at their stuff and they've had about three storylines, the first one was super, super, super great for me. The Reverse Flash one, yeah, I fell off.
Yeah. That's the one that I've had the difficulty with. It's just not. The Reverse, and to be honest with you, part of it also is I've hated the redesign of the Flash costume since the New 52. That's always bothered me, and it bothers me every time I read the book, and I haven't been able to get over it after all this time. But, I think the Reverse Flash stuff, I've read better uses of the character, and so it's tough when I'm comparing it to that. This kind of brings me to the next point. And I think that this is something that do you think when they relaunched the New 52, did they do extensive market research into why readers had left comic books and what it is that their fans currently reading wanted? Or do you think they just creatively felt inspired and had an idea and went off and did that, hoping that that would be satisfying people? How much research do you think there was into the relaunch at the time?
Do you have an opinion on that, Matt? I mean, to me, probably none. I would say there's so little money kicking around for that kind of for that level of marketing.
Yeah.
That. None is what I would expect. It's a professional opinion as opposed to stats.
I would say as much as any other relaunch ever. I don't believe that market research drives anything creative in the comics industry. I think that sales do, but not market research. And those are very different things.
It's very different things. And it's too bad if they don't have the money for something like that, because I think that that would have served them well. I think it would have. It's little things that have managed to turn me off of the books. And it's little things that manage to usually – it's the little things where I go, I just don't see the character like that, that usually turn me off of any book, Marvel, DC, or anything else. And especially, I mean, and that's a difficulty you're always going to have when you have long-term readers who have their own opinions of what a character should look like. But I don't know. What is it that turns you off a character? I mean, you said you talk about the Green Lantern and the change here. So what is it that will turn you off a character that you had been enjoying for a long time? Any of you?
Okay. Actually, the DCU got me out of a lot of Marvel DC comics, because all of a sudden I didn't have any mainstays to hang on to. Superman was doing something weird. Batman was doing something weird. Green Lantern was out in space. All of a sudden, I didn't know what the hell was going on. And for me, reading comics sometimes is about familiarity. I'm going to hang out with my friends, just like when I look forward to doing the podcast. I am going to talk with my friends. And all of a sudden, I was lost. And I don't need that in my comic book reading life. Really turned me off that I didn't know what was going on and nothing was familiar. I think I would have enjoyed one of those things happening, but having everything happen at the same time really made me look more towards Marvel of all things. I didn't think I'd become a Marvelite again, but I'm looking on my pull list now, and I got a lot of new Marvel on there right now.
I'm sorry.
See, and I have this kind of, it's a fanboy hypocrisy that I want a feeling of forward motion, not necessarily continuity, not necessarily that it's always building and that there's never a new starting point, but that it's quote unquote going somewhere. What turned me off Marvel was that I felt it was going somewhere, but where it started from was like 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And I'm not willing to do the homework to find out what any of these mean. I read Secret Wars number 0 and 1, and I didn't hate them because I didn't understand anything that was going on in them. And it wasn't from a, I'm too dumb to read this. It was from a, I feel like I've walked in on the third book in a fantasy fantasy series.
You know what, Keith? I'm just going to let you finish your thought, but you're right. It's the same thing happened to me. Now, don't get me wrong, I continue reading it, but and it's not that good, but Marvel Unlimited makes it easy. but you know what? You're right that a lot of these events and these things and these books in general from both companies, especially Marvel, I think, they are designed for their core audience. So how do you add new readers? They're not ever designed. It's gone far away from this is every book is somebody's first book type of mentality to a, hey, let's make a reference by calling some character by their first name in passing. And then like three pages later, maybe you'll recognize that what character that was because it'll be on your mind the whole time. Like, you know.
Well, and for Marvel, I started getting back in at a relaunch point for the X-Men books. And I had enjoyed the X-Men books a couple of different times. I have gotten into, like, I'll get all of them or I'll get none of them is kind of where I've always been, the X-Men's. And then, so I got in, and then it was like 11 months later, they hit a new relaunch point. And I'm like, I don't know, didn't you just do this big event where you rearranged all the teams? And then like 6 months later, they did another one. Like, I think I'm done, because really, it was this like elaborate game of Red Rover, where you're just shuffling the teams around. And I never actually get to know any character, because it's more about what the lineup looks like on the cover of the next number one than it is about actually developing a character or a story arc.
Well, and that's a problem with needing a new number one every 12 months to boost your sales. Because it's not just about relabeling the cover. It's about rejiggering everything. You know, I will say that the thing that keeps me coming back to books or is the thing that makes me drop it immediately is it ultimately is just how good the story is and how good the creative is. A book like Grayson could have been a total mess, and it was a total success and fantastic because it had two writers on it that are geniuses and an artist who just kills like crazy. And, you know, and I wasn't even that crazy about the idea before they did it, and it's one of my favorite books. You know, I was very skeptical about Batgirl when the new team came over, and they won me over because it was just well done. And it was a complete 180 in tone, but it worked out great. But, you know, that doesn't happen all the time. And, you know, and I think where it, you know, there are just a few places for me where it just didn't happen this year. And like Green Lantern was one of those. And the Superman books have been consistently that. Ultimately, you just need better stories and, you know, and maybe they need to be less dependent on, you know, I mean, I'm always much more in favor of the creator's vision. So something like Catwoman by Genevieve Valentine, completely different than it had ever been before, a bit separate from the rest of the books. You know, they cut that off. The book dropped 40% in sales with the new writer, but she's back in her cat suit and everyone feels familiar again.
You know, it should be just the quality of the book. It should be just the quality of the storyline, the art, the writing, but it's definitely not. I mean, again, I got turned off. I mean, little things, you know, I'm reading a Superman issue and he was playing video games with Jimmy Olsen. And I thought, Superman playing video games? I'm out. Like, it's a little thing like that that just makes me go. And I know it's one of the things that they did with DC was they made all the characters very young. And meanwhile, your core reading audience is 25 to 45. And your characters are, pardon me?
Your core comic book store purchasers are that age.
Yes, they are.
And the real challenge is, what about the people who are not the...
Oh, you didn't let me get there, Matt.
35 to 55 white males. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, you didn't let me get there. Your core comic book readers are 25 to 45. And you're trying to appeal to a younger, to a teenager or younger, and yet I don't feel that the storylines are as inviting to those characters. So you have and as appropriate for those characters, for those younger readers necessarily to bring them in. So this is where I talk about market research. You're creating a universe which is designed to appeal to a certain demographic. And yet you're not really doing the books that, to me, would appeal to that demographic. The books would appeal to the older demographic, and they're not fitting well. There's gaps. And to me, that's one of the issues that I had with the relaunch, and that I'm hoping that this rebirth can address for me.
So it's interesting because you're focused on age. I don't think that any of the companies are looking at age. I don't think any of them are looking to bring in teenage readers. I think they're looking at gender. They're looking to bring in women, not men.
And there has been success with that.
Some.
There has been some success with that, yeah.
And there are other plans afoot that will probably be more successful. But DCU was, if you want to boil it down to one thing, it was them trying to get more women reading. Mm. Because that because they're out there purchasing.
And so they thought by making everybody 25 and younger, they would do that?
Now, that was the New 52. I'm talking specifically about the last year of publishing.
Okay.
Now, you know, this is just a side note, but who the hell are they trying to bring in with this Hanna-Barbera
launch? I have no idea.
Scooby-Doo with the cyber monocle?
40 and 50-year-olds, strangely.
Yeah, it's really weird.
Who else remembers these characters? Like, I mean, aside from Scooby-Doo and Flintstones, like, no one under 40 knows these characters.
The only wacky race that people will know and have enjoyed over the last 15 years was from Star Wars Episode One.
No, I actually had to look ahead to see if these books were launching in April. It was some sort of...
It is April.
That said, I'm buying them, but...
Yeah, I think isn't it May? Is it May they're launching?
I thought it was April.
It is May.
Whatever.
No, April solicits are already out.
Oh, okay. Then May, yeah. It's contrary to what you may have read online, no, Hanna-Barbera is not what DC was teasing when they said Rebirth.
I hope not.
It's you can tell because they would have then used the hashtag Rebirth.
These books were just so wacky that I had to include them.
Yeah, there's something about Shaggy.
It was just mind blowing that anyone thought this was a great idea.
Something about Shaggy with arm tattoos, I don't know.
I mean, come on, Johnny Quest by Doc Shaner and Jeff Parker. That's freaking genius.
Well, it'll be great. See, yeah.
That book's not going to be awesome.
I honestly don't know because I have never seen a Johnny Quest cartoon.
I know the genre, and I know those creators, and it's going to be great. And you know the thing is, it's aimed at 40 and 50 year olds who also have children, and so will be buying those books for themselves and possibly sharing them. The nice thing is that they're not replacing the existing books. So there are two other Scooby-Doo books going on right now. Those continue just the way they are. So this is on top of that. I think that they're looking at a little of what Archie's done. I think that they're just looking at good creators and trying to revitalize some of these properties. I've never even heard of Wacky Races. So I must be like just too young for that.
The name explains the concept, so
I get the concept.
It was great.
I also never saw it.
But I've never said, you know, what I'm in the mood for is a really creepy Fred Flintstone.
The tricky part of this will be how if they can make them feel like a brand new thing instead of a licensed book.
Sure.
I mean, I know they own the characters, but you know. Licensed books are notorious for one thing. They get a subset of comic readers, and then that little sliver are people that are willing to read a comic that are interested in that property. What they basically never get is people who read comics who aren't interested in that property. You don't get people that read the X-Files comic who never watch the show. So it will really come down to, I've never seen Johnny Quest. I guess I get the concept because I've seen things based on Johnny Quest. But
one of the things is that, I mean, you referenced that, you know, they've seen the success that Archie's had with doing what they're doing. By the way, did you guys know that Archie Unlimited exists? It's like Marvel Unlimited. Yeah. Thousands of Archie books cheap. I just discovered this. I'm like,
I mean,
unfortunately, they're all on my Scribd, you know, already. But I mean, like, man, if I had a little tyke, I'd be, you know, or somebody, I'd be doing that and go read Archie. Thousands, it's good for you. But
yeah, but right now Archie's giving away 200 bucks, man.
That's only on Apple though, not on Android. So it's a weird thing.
Oh, that's not on Android. Okay,
no, that's a weird thing.
No, but I'm just thinking, why would I pay for? I can't read 200 Archie books. It It'll take me 5 years.
Oh, come on. I'll take you 5 minutes. But but the point is, anyways, you know, I mean, I think they see the success that that they've had with Archie. But the difference is, I think Archie, when they're making a radical change, because they've always done it in a way that is very respectful of the characters and high quality, there's a certain trust with those Archie readers with what they're doing. So I don't know that the trust exists with what DC is doing with these Hanna-Barbera characters. But I mean, I'll have an open mind for them. I think you're right. I think, Matt, when you look at the creative teams and you think of what they do, it's like, man, this could be fun.
Yeah, I mean, think about Keith Giffen, J.M. DeMatteis, and Howard Porter on Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
How is that not something you want to read?
I'm definitely into that because of, yeah, because Justice League 3001, so it's the team. I mean, I wouldn't watch a Scooby-Doo cartoon now, but that team certainly has me interested.
Yeah. But yeah, it's I think making good creative choices is how you earn back that trust. I have a real issue with the trust argument, though, because I've seen a lot of fans use it to never bother acknowledging things that DC actually does. And they're like, oh, I don't trust them. It doesn't matter that they, you know, produce this awesome Black Canary book or whatever. I mean, they're like, it doesn't matter. And I'm like, well, it seems like you're predetermined not to care. So you're clearly...
Yeah, I understand. I understand your point of view, Matt. But the fact is that you can't blame somebody for feeling that way. Like, you can't blame people for how they feel. If they feel like they've been, not listened to, that's and I think that's the issue. Is everybody just wants to feel like you're listening to me? You may not, and that's the thing. That's the different thing that Archie's done. There's a feeling like, okay, we're listening to you. We may not do what you're saying, but at least tell us what you're saying, and we'll hear you. And that's, you can't blame.
I think that's entirely perception, though. There's no mechanism that makes me think that Archie listens more than DC does.
No, it's a perception. You're right, but you can't. But if it exists, it's real.
Perception is reality. I do absolutely agree that that trust is a real problem that DC has. And you know, like Matt was saying, I don't know how you get past it because people have used that, now have that word as a wall, mm-hmm. that they're not going to, like, you can't earn back someone's trust who treats it like you broke up with an ex, like it's like an ex that cheated on you kind of trust. Like, they're not getting back to it together with DC. And I guess that's it. Like, I mean, it's been 4.5 years since New 52. If they're not going to trust them, they're never going to. So it's over.
And I'll say this: I cannot judge anyone for the emotions they have, but I can judge them for how much they want to tell me about them.
That's true. You're very right. So. It can be very annoying.
So I mean, I don't think you can recover that if the people have internalized it to the point where there is no way back. I mean, to me, Convergence, the tie-ins to Convergence were a love letter to past fans, and many of them wouldn't read them because they don't trust DC. I saw that were used a lot of people that like, oh, they're doing a Question miniseries, but I don't trust that it's going to be any good. I don't trust that it's going to matter. Well, it's the creative team that was on it when you loved the book. So why wouldn't you read it?
All you can do is continue to put out. The only way to fix that is to put out for so long, such good books that people, one person who breaks down their trust tries it and tells somebody else. And that's the only thing. It's a long struggle back. Sure. It's a long struggle back, but it's not impossible, but it's a long struggle back. But it really is a shame when people say, I don't trust them. I think it's a shame, but I don't blame them for feeling that way. Let's get into the final topic here of the day. We talk about the DC characters. If we're talking about the relaunch and we don't know exactly, or rebirth, we don't know exactly what it's going to be, but what is it you want, or maybe Matt does, who knows? but but what is it that you guys, what take of each of the main characters, of your favorite characters within DC, what's the take that you think you would like to see that is both, that will satisfy everybody? Or what's the yeah, satisfy the most people. There is no way to satisfy everybody, but you know what I mean? I can reference Justice League Unlimited. I look at all the brilliant characterization in that, one of the greatest cartoons of all time, and all the brilliant characterizations and so many characters, and so many got their spotlight. They were all perfect to the ideal of what that character's personality is, even if it's because it's a cartoon and somewhat limited opportunity. It's still very basic, but it felt real and it's awesome. So, what is the kind of, like, I look at those characters, I think, well, that's the perfect use of the question, for instance, you know, what they did in that series. But what is kind of, what would you like to see? What's the Superman you'd like to see, Keith?
I think I'm actually going to go a little broader, that it's what I've realized both in Marvel and DC, because of the cycle of relaunches and the cycle of changing creative teams, what I've noticed more than anything that I'm missing is supporting cast. Non-powered supporting cast, more specifically. I mean, Batman's got all the supporting cast in the world, and they're all in a friggin' costume. and, like, with the exception of Alfred, everyone's got a damn costume in those books. So there's no human sense. With Superman specifically, I think the biggest misstep's the wrong word. The thing that I really didn't like about how they rebooted Superman at the beginning of New 52 was the supporting cast, and specifically getting rid of Mom Pa Kent. They had him removed from humanity. They were focusing on the alien part. That's where Morrison wanted to go. No one else really knew how to write him like that. I think these characters have felt distant from the world they're in without interacting with humans. I think it is one of the things that Batgirl did quite well under Brendan's, at the start of Brendan's run a couple of years ago, that there actually is a supporting cast that's not all in costume. About half of them are now, Matt?
No.
There are people, just civilians. Yeah. And I think that's what's kind of missing to me. And Superman specifically, Superman is so godlike that you need to ground him that way. And I don't think he has been in quite a while.
Is that your kitten, Keith?
That is my kitten. It wouldn't be a show without a cat.
No, right? That cat definitely obviously is agreeing with you.
Yeah, I would actually broadly agree with Keith. I don't know that I, in the specifics, like, I don't really miss Ma and Pa Kent that much, but I do miss Superman and Clark Kent being surrounded by Lois Lane and Jimmy Olsen and Perry White and Lana Lang and other people, even like Steel and whatnot, on a regular basis, and actually connecting with them, not just having them be in the background. I think that Superman needs to be in his, you know, it doesn't have to be the original classic costume. I'm going to be willful and say I never want to see those stupid red underwear again.
I totally agree. I think he should look like, he should look like Kurt Swan Superman, but without the underwear.
Yeah, I mean, I've actually
most of their redesigns were great.
Yeah, feeling like he should have a little bit more of a scoop neck again, particularly because I think it's time to bring some chest hair to Superman in the comics. Like, that's worked very well in the movies. But no, truly, like, they need to bring back a sense of wonder to Superman and a sense of he's the goodest person in the room.
Yes.
And I think you can do that without making him a goody two shoes or a Boy Scout. But
Justice League Unlimited again.
Again, it's all about creative. You put the right creative team and let them do it. And I think that is actually a problem in that office.
I'd agree with that, yeah.
And I think, and Lois Lane, you need to, and I don't think they need to be married. I don't, and frankly, I've been interested in Superman and Wonder Woman's relationship, but I think Lois Lane needs to have a big role regardless. It doesn't matter that she's married or not. And sorry, guys, you're going to get flamed for this now. But she has to have a huge role.
I don't think our fan base are really the...
Oh, that's true.
Too. And also, we don't care what people blame us for. That's sure. The nice thing. I could care less what people think. That's a good thing.
I want her dating Jose Delgado again.
That'd be awesome. You know,
I liked when Lois dated other people.
I want her dating Bruce Wayne.
I want her dating someone. Like, I mean, I like her in the book enough that it matters that she's, like, you know, doing more than, you know, typing up a letter or typing up a story, and then she's out of the issue again.
What's the Superman character that you liked? How would you like him presented, Chris? I know he's never been your favorite character, so that's why this will be very interesting for me. Because you've said that in the past because he's so powerful.
I am a huge Jimmy Olsen fan. I am in favor of Jimmy Olsen Superman's Pal comic relaunch. I've said this for years. I love Jimmy Olsen. I just don't like Superman. I think it's also with all these relaunches and stuff, we have to sort of get consistent creative teams. I think that's what I want most out of this relaunch is rebirth. Some sort of Earth. Promise.
Call it rebirth. Okay. What about Green Lantern then, Matt? What would you like to see as your what's your ideal, you believe, presentation for the Green Lantern? And that goes obviously beyond just Hal Jordan.
I think that it's Hal and the core connected, not necessarily together. I think it's one Green Lantern taking the core book. And I don't know that necessarily has to be Hal. It could be John. I guess or it could be the two of them, but it has to be more recognizable, and there has to be a point of view. I think the two books right now have different problems. And so I want to see Hal Jordan back, if he's going to be the feature of the book, back as Green Lantern proper, and space, Earth, whatever, it doesn't matter, as long as the stories are good, but it just needs to be more recognizable. Green Lantern Corps has to have more focus, because as much as I adore Ethan Van Sciver's art, and I really love Tom Taylor as a writer, the first issue of their Green Lantern Corps book didn't feel very strong to me, because there was no point of view character. And I don't know that John Stewart's the right character for that. I think in some ways Kilowog might be. I think John is probably, though, a better character from a commercial standpoint. But there wasn't enough of him to feel that way. So that's the big thing for Green Lantern. And then just, you know, just with all these things, like making them recognizable, like, They can't feel out of the blue.
Any thoughts on Green Lantern, guys?
My Green Lantern for Rebirth would be Lost Army by a creative team I actually like. I love the concept of it. I just don't like what they're doing.
Now, I want to sidestep here with Rebirth. I got back into DC in 2011, right before the New 52. I read a whole bunch of stuff to kind of
homework.
Big events, basically. I did a lot of homework to get myself ready for what I thought was a relaunch, what everyone thought was a relaunch in the New 52, which turned out to be a reboot, and then most of the homework was. Well, I mean, they were great stories, so not for nothing, but I studied for the wrong test. Now, they've very specifically chosen the word rebirth for what they're doing. Jeff Johns has said that he's tweeted that that word means something to them. There's that word specifically has value. Now, Moen and Matt, I don't know about you, Chris, were into DC when Green Lantern Rebirth and Flash Rebirth came out. So what hints in those two books give us an idea of of what we could be seeing? Like, they've chosen this word for a reason.
You know what? I haven't, because I wasn't looking for it. It's really difficult to. Keith, you threw me for one here. Any I'm thoughts, sorry. Matt? Pardon me?
What was the question?
Rebirth is a word they chose for a reason for sure. What they're doing. We've had Green Lantern Rebirth and we have had Flash Rebirth. So what is it about them that would give us a clue to where things are heading?
It'll be about going back to core concepts. So recognizable images of the characters without scuttling history. That's what both those rebirths were about. And to some degree, embracing the sort of full vision of the characters. Because what you saw come out of both of those books was, sort of a bigger, they both made each character, Flash and Green Lantern, bigger than they were before. Mm-hmm. Like, in scope.
That's true, yeah.
I've never actually read Flash Rebirth. For Green Lantern Rebirth. I think for Green Lantern, did you have an answer on that, Mo, or do you want to...
No. I think Matt covered it very well there. Because like I say, I wasn't really thinking of it, so I'm not really looking back going, what are the hints as to what it could be? I wasn't reading it thinking this will lead to some hints and some clues to something in the future. So,
not story-wise, but tone.
Yeah, story-wise, I think it is more tone. Sure. I think it is more tone is that... Chris talked about having it feeling like hanging with a familiar friend, and he talked about how the appeal of that. And I do think that both of those books, when the rebirth was over, you definitely had that feeling like, okay, next issue I'm going to hang with a familiar friend, and that's a very appealing thing. So I think that's kind of, when you talk about the tone, I think that is kind of, maybe that is what they're going for. What is the appealing, what is the tone, what is the whatever now you guys would like to see from Wonder Woman or Batman? Is there any, have you guys ever felt super connected to Wonder Woman? I've never been able to. Even when I've read books that I like, I have never felt connected to her.
Oh, yeah.
I have. That was the Burn run. And that was more because I was reading it thinking, okay, if I just imagine you're green, she's She-Hulk.
There was something of that, yeah.
Yeah, that's probably true. No, I did not feel connected there. But I will say I never dropped the book until the Finches came on. It's the first time in 30 years that I've dropped that book.
Wow.
And so I'll say I have felt very connected. I haven't felt connected to Wonder Woman in every instance, mind you. But the ones where I have been the ones where the writer gets how complicated the character is. Mm. And gives her the respect she wants and broadens her world.
Simone Rucka definitely did that much better, for instance, yeah.
Yeah, Simone Rucka. I think Azzarello's run was really great. Jimenez, all of those were very different from each other. Perez, obviously.
Yeah.
But all of them did something, gave her the respect that she deserved. Visually, I think it's a no-brainer. They should just pick up how she'll look in the Batman versus Superman movie. Mm. Like, I don't know. Like, if they don't do that, they're stupid. Mm-hmm.
I think for me, I have never really connected strongly with the character. The Perez run is probably the one that I would gravitate to, though. And I think that what Perez did better than a lot is capture the nobility of the character, focus on the princess part of Princess Diana, that she was, that she's not aloof, but she's definitely refined and focused.
I agree, Keith. I don't like it when she gets too fierce. I don't like it when the warrior takes over from the princess too much. Personally, I like it when she is. I like it with a little bit more that she is, that she battles when she has to, not because she wants to, and that she is very. If you say she is the female Superman in the nobility part, and that she's good at her core, I like that.
I think a bit of a soldier part of it. Like, she fights as a soldier when it's the time to negotiate, it's the time to negotiate.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I don't know. I don't really see in Superman. Like,
no, totally different.
Yeah. Like, I see him stepping aside and letting someone else negotiate. She is the negotiator.
That's true.
But she's also a soldier more than, I mean, Superman's a crashy, smashy warrior. I see her more as, you know, okay, so it's war then. We will fight this honorably and we'll do what we have
but
to
not
do.
But not that she's looking forward to the fight, but that it's what she is her duty.
I don't think we're supposed to connect with Wonder Woman.
Oh,
she's
supposed
the
to.
Thor of the DC universe.
Right. Well, there's
a relatable Thor would be awful.
One of the reasons people like the movie characters because they found that to be a relatable Thor. If it hadn't, those movies wouldn't have been as successful.
I agree.
No. Even in the movies, he's just sort of, he's a god. He's handsome. He's eye candy.
Hey, look, so am I.
The supporting characters are more important in the movie than Thor.
Oh my god, they're terrible though.
They're so awful. Yeah. Thor's shtick in the movie is the man out of time thing. Like it's essentially like, I mean, everything he does in those films is the same as if he had been a time traveling character from 100 years from like 200 years ago. That's how they treat him as like, you know, our world is confusing to him. What's a cell phone? It's exactly that approach. And that makes him, it makes him vulnerable because he doesn't understand what's going on. I don't see that for Wonder Woman. But I think there's some distance that I see for that character from, as it has always been called, man's world. Mm-hmm. So that's my take. But as I said, it hasn't been a character I've really gravitated to over the years.
How about one of the characters that I think has, I mean, obviously, one of the characters that upon the relaunch with the new 52 was most radically changed, and yet I found it, I didn't find it jarring at all. Though I can't say that I didn't miss the old character as well, and that's Green Arrow, Oliver Queen. And it's a little bit complicated because he has the TV show as well. What do you guys see? How would you like to see Oliver Queen presented? I'm guessing, Chris, you just tell us to just go read the Grell stuff again.
Actually, no. I think they should bring it into line with the TV show. I think the continuity. Is so terrible right now. We need a grounding, and the closest place to grab onto is the TV show, and the TV show is not bad right now. So, and actually falls in line with the Grell stuff fairly good. So, yeah, I'd use that as a grab on point.
Yeah, I can say they're not going to do that. I know that as an absolute fact. But what, again, I think it, you know, I didn't love that it wasn't about his age. I think to some degree it was about his attitude.
I agree
when
that.
They brought him back in the new 52. But quite frankly, all of that is mitigated by the creative team. They had four creative teams in the first 15 issues or whatever, and all of them were not good. And they just didn't get it. I mean, some of them were good creators. Some of them aren't. But none of them got it. And when they brought Jeff Lemire on with Andrea Sorrentino, then it sang. And then when they left, it stopped singing. So, I think that, it's all about having someone who's going to bring in a really good vision. And Jeff Lemire, to be fair, brought in some of the elements from the TV show. So that it's not that they're not there and ready to be picked up. But I don't know that you have to really want to do that. But again, I think he's an important character, but he's more important than his sales dictate.
I'd agree with that. Yeah. And you know what? I have to say, first off, I didn't like the Lemire outside of the first issue. So I would disagree on looking at that as a series or it got it. But, the thing about the older character, and like you say, it's not about his age. I'm going back to it again because I think it so brilliantly captures all the characters. In Justice League Unlimited, they bring him into the team, and he says, "What am I doing here? I have no superpowers." And they say, "That's exactly the point. We need somebody here without powers to tell us when we, with the powers, are getting too distant from the non-powered, from the people of Earth. You're there to guard us from becoming what we could become if we aren't grounded." And the character is kind of a cranky guy, and he's left wing, and it's that creates a perspective that's unique to that character and to DC Universe, and it just created somebody. It was a voice that was needed to make the universe more real and to give it a broader perspective, and that's kind of what they lost with the changes, and that's kind of what I'd like to see again.
I'd agree with that part. Like, certainly that perspective, that very clear political perspective that you just really don't see in comics because I don't know if they're afraid to alienate a chunk of the readership by making someone obviously conservative or obviously liberal. But the idea that I think it's almost like in New 52, they thought he's young, so he can't be idealistic like that. As if speechifying 25-year-olds was something that didn't exist. he could be even more self-righteous and bleeding heart as a 25-year-old as he is as like a 40-year-old.
And he could have his curly mustache back.
Yes, let us focus. Make sure we focus on the most important thing that Matt wants to see back. We know there's a fan base that will not read that book until the goatee's back.
Until the goatee.
Green Lantern versus Donald Trump is a book I'd buy.
Oh, hell yeah, absolutely. And I know who I'm cheering for. but don't put the hat back on his head. I like the hoodie. I like the hoodie.
I kind of like the hoodie. The
owl. That looks much better.
I certainly Grell's is the go-to for me.
Yeah.
And it was grounding that character. I mean, certainly, like, one thing that Grell did is that he never called him Green Arrow in the comic.
Yeah.
It was a specific choice to really focus on the person, the human level of that character. That he was sort of disguised, but he didn't go in one door as Oliver Queen and out the back door of the building as Green Arrow, kind of.
He wasn't a superhero in the Grell book. I mean, he didn't have trick shots. He didn't have, wasn't called Green Arrow. Green Lantern showed up once as Hal Jordan, and that was it. Like, it was, that was refreshing.
It made it really different than anything else. And as I was talking about the supporting cast, that human level that this is a world people live in, like Green Arrow did that really expertly under Grell, that it was a real place that, you know, people came in and out of his life. He had a job, he had to balance things. He got, there was a spy.
You want the Grell stuff, but hopefully without the Black Canary rape. Is that
no Black Canary at all?
I think,
what would you want to say, Matt?
I'm fine with him being 25 years old. I'm fine with him being 20 at 25.
I'm fine with that.
I think it's the idealism and it's the human part that I really want to see.
But what, you had something you wanted to say about that, Matt, there? Just
never Black Canary again.
Yeah.
I don't want the two of them to even be in the same room.
Interesting. Whereas I kind of like those long-term romances, so I just don't want the rape. thank you.
Find someone for him.
For me?
Find someone else for him, not that one.
Yeah. All right, that's... How about The Flash, guys? The Flash is an interesting one. I think with whatever's going on with the rebirth, there's probably... it's been one of the things that I have really enjoyed about DC has been their attempts, and Marvel's done it too, but I really like kind of how DC's gone about it. It has been their attempts to create more diversity within the universe, because, and I don't even blame the characters for being the what they were before, because they were created by, you look where the time that most of those characters are created and whatever, and what else would they be, but I like the diversity. Flash has, I think there's some questions about what's going to happen with Wally West. Do we know? Do we have worries? And what about the rest of the DC universe, the diversity, and your idea of Flash? I'm throwing a shitload out there for you guys. Go ahead.
I see Wally West in costume, possibly the return of Kid Flash. I don't see them making. Well, as I said, I don't think it's a reboot, so I don't think they're making any changes there. But we have a Black Wally West on the TV show, so there is no reason at all to change direction with this. I don't know what's going to happen,
except for they say that they're going to go more familiar. That's the only thing that scares me. I hope they don't do that. I just want that Kid Flash. I just want that Kid Flash costume because it's great.
No, they're not going to. They're, that is Wally West.
Good
in the current continuity. It's that kid is who he is. Whether he becomes Kid Flash or not, I actually don't know, but I would hope that he does at some point. But Barry Allen will continue to be the Flash. There's no question about that.
Yeah.
And what is your ideal Flash, guys, then? And what, no worries about diversity going away then in general from DCU, that if they're making characters more familiar, we don't think that's a concern.
I actually think the Flash is very familiar right now. Just because I wasn't that excited about this last storyline doesn't mean I don't think that the general direction isn't. I think the general direction is fine. It's just, I just didn't love on a particular story. But I don't think there's anything about the character in general that's not, you know. That's
if you're like me, Matt, it was less the characterization of Walt or of Barry Allen. It was more the characterization of Professor Zoom that just didn't quite click for you.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
I think the biggest trick with Flash will be to make it familiar and not have it feel like the show at the same time. I was really, really turned off when I read that 8-page preview and they were making a big deal about finding out who killed his mom. I'm like, I'm watching this story already. I don't need it again. Like, I've got a version of Flash that's doing that. I don't need, you know, a B version of it. So I think a focus on him in the DCU, I think, would be good. To get him about a bit outside of, like, the Rogues are such a big presence that he's always had, like, you know, this stable of characters to fight that he never kind of gets outside the city, outside of his own little realm. So I'd like to see him more connected with the outside. But go ahead.
That's funny. I want to see him less connected with the rest of the DC. No, to me, the Flash, I went back and I've been reading a bunch of Bill Meister Loeb's Flash. I want the Flash to be fun again. I want some silly stories. I can't stand having a serious Flash anymore. I want outlandish villains, not just the Rogues, but some his role to get gallery. He has a lot of characters not used that are just plain silly.
I think a sense of fun. Again. Yeah, I agree with you, Chris. I kind of miss the sense of fun. Pardon me?
I think Mark Waid captured that balance really well.
Yeah.
He had stories that were really, focused on the Speed Force and whatnot, and then others that were sort of one-offs. I think some amount of that is true. I think with the Flash, you might want to, after a run like Rob and Vans and Brett's, you might want to go with a contrasting look.
Yeah.
So something less, in-house, or that sort of 90s stuff. And I love, by the way, I just bought this beautiful, beautiful piece by Brett Booth. So I love Brett Booth's art, but I think a contrast would be something more, more fun, more lighthearted, sort of like that Johnny Quest look would be a lot of fun.
I think there's there's
something about particularly Arrow and Flash, because they've got these, because they've got the TV shows that are in general quite liked, especially Flash. There's a risk of trying to copy elements. And I know Matt's mentioned to me every once in a while, Felicity Smoke's appearing in this comic. But why I like Felicity Smoke is so much about the actor who is portraying that character and how they play it. And I think Flash is that way. I always think it's funny when people say the Flash TV show is so light, because it's the darkest, most depressing story for the whole first season. He watches his mom get killed 10 times in the first season. But Grant Gustin is a good actor who stays light in all of that. If you take that same story, put it in a comic, it's going to be depressing.
Yeah. Yeah. This is interesting. I just want to see the costume get away from the million metal pieces attached to him, thanks to through the speed force. I think it looks stupid. Just go back to the classic costume. Man, I love it. I love, you know what you're talking about. Was it when Waid was doing it, who was on the art? Was it Wierengo or?
Oh, he had a lot of artists, but Wierengo's the one people really remember. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good look. I love that. I hated his work on when he was doing Spider-Man, but I loved his Flash. Rest in peace. What are we
going
to...
That is one of the things of having Jim Lee as the primary designer and the primary aesthetic of all of these redesigns is that they were Jim Lee-ish costumes, which meant there's seams and buckles and lines.
But it's only bothering me with the Flash.
Yeah, but I mean, it takes forever for the artist to draw, and once you're drawing that, you can't imp on other details. Like once the hero's costume with that much detail, everyone's clothing has to get that much detail.
Yeah, that's true.
And it starts all looking of a piece. I do think Flash should be in look much more streamlined, much more flat color. But we'll see.
We'll see. And what about Batman?
Batman's fine.
Batman, you guys are... I think you're probably right. The nice thing about Batman is what the Batman advantage already is... There's not one Batman take already. There's been a million Batman takes, and they've all worked and managed to be relatable and had great stories for 40 years that I've been reading the character almost, he's pretty seamless. I don't want to, you don't need the changes necessarily. But that said, I don't know that we're the only ones who, just because we feel that way, obviously based on, I think some people have some complaints about what they'd like to see.
I think there is one thing I'll say, which is, yes, it needs to be Bruce back in the costume. They need to stop messing around putting someone else in the costume. And just a more focus on having Batman do stuff instead of having stuff happen to Batman.
Sure.
I think a lot of it, so much, even in Snyder's, it's reactive, which I don't think is where Batman usually is.
So I have no inside info. on what's happening with Batman.
That you'll share on the air, but off air.
No, I literally have not. if there's a secret at DC, I'm sure it would be that one anyway. But I know what I would predict is going to happen with Batman, and I'll share that. And again, no inside info, but just looking at comic market and things, what's happening and whatnot, and it's been rumored, and I think it's probably a fair rumor, that Scott Snyder's staying, but not on Batman, probably moving over to Detective. A lot of the stories he has said, this is not rumor, this is what he's actually said, he has more one-and-done type detective stories to tell about Batman. But I predict that Batman itself, the book, will be written by Tom King. I'm just throwing that out there. I think he is the successor to that spot.
What do you want to see with Batman?
I like that. Of course, I'm in favor of 100% less Scott Snyder. I don't need his detective book either. Because he'll be the de facto editor on all the Batman titles until he's gone out of the Batman universe completely. He's had such an amazing run.
I just love, I really wish this was a video podcast, just so you all could see. When you said that, the look on Keith's face, just of this incredulous, like you cannot fathom what you just heard.
Trying to figure out where he was going with that.
Like,
it was the presentation more than the more than the substance. Okay. I haven't been the hugest fan of Snyder's Batman in a little while. I haven't enjoyed the last couple storylines, basically. Nothing against him as a writer, it hasn't worked for me for quite a while. But it was just the way that Chris was presenting the idea that that sounded like do not let the door hit your ass on the way out, Scott Snyder. I'm tired of looking at you. You've done
nothing for him. Get out of here.
I just find his presence on the Batman book so overwhelming. He's dictated the storyline for so long.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we've had some excellent talent on the Bat books. But because they all have to tie into Snyder's vision, I don't particularly love that direction. You know, I want a new and fresh take.
That's probably part of why he's moving books.
But moving to another Bat book doesn't do. I mean, as long as he's there,
the Batman writer is the head Batman writer. Always, Grant Morrison was the head Batman writer. Even for his short run, Tony Daniel was the head Batman writer. Scott Snyder was the head Batman writer. Whoever's next will be the head Batman writer.
Chris,
that's how it works.
I do get what you're saying, though, Chris, because there's been times where what you're saying is how I felt about the entire DC publishing line with Geoff Johns and the entire Marvel publishing line with Brian Michael Bendis.
Well, that's not going to change with Geoff.
You know,
Geoff is CEO.
Yeah.
And I would bet.
I'm not saying it should change. I'm just saying at times I felt like that.
I'm guessing, this is my other prediction that I don't know anything for sure. I'm guessing that almost every book in the entire line gets a new creative team in June, except Justice League.
I think that's probably fair. I mean, I think my...
Is this becoming the prediction show or what?
I'll say it.
I think
we're getting to the end. I'm going to throw some of this stuff out.
I think one of the challenges is that I agree with you, Chris, that it's the shadow of what Snyder's doing, both because it was the most popular, but because it is the Batman book, is that everything felt like the B book to that. Like it was, everything had to tread water a little bit to match up with where the big beats were going to be in Batman. It feels like it's supposed to be that with Justice League, and it never gets there. Like, if it always feels like Justice League, because it's by Johns, because it's really good and has everyone in it, it's the flagship book, it's where all the big deal stuff is going to happen, but then everything else kind of never seems to get back to where Justice League's going. Like, it seems really disconnected that way. So, I mean, I'd like to see some kind of plan that Justice League is going to, like, that everything syncs up with Justice League every 6 months or something.
Yeah, I don't love that idea. I'll say that the older I get, the less I care about any of these books syncing up with each other.
It's not continuity-wise to me so much as...
Tone?
No, I mean, we've got a year of Darkseid War. We're closing on a year that Darkseid War has been running. And, like, it will be a year in the end. Where none of the versions that have been appearing in the other books are these. I've forgotten whether this takes place after the current stuff or before the current stuff.
Just admit they're in the same universe is what you're saying.
That's kind of where I'm at. Yeah.
Yeah. I get that. Yeah. Okay. Let's talk then about any of the other secondary characters out there: Catwoman, Hawkgirl, Booster Gold, Blue Beetle, Red Tornado. I don't know anybody else that you're like, this is the version of this character that I would like to see that I love the most.
Not necessarily Booster, but either Rip Hunter or some kind of time traveling, a universe traveling, to start getting a real scale of what else is out there. Like, they, Multiversity was so successful in expanding the scope of what the DC universe could be, and no one else is playing with it. We've seen three Earths plus like a one shot of like when Grant Morrison basically was tying into Multiversity 2 years before it came out. But that's all we've seen. And even Darkseid War is only hinting at what else is out there. So yeah, whether it's Rip or Booster, something that wanders a bit and makes this universe bigger.
I think for me, seeing a Supergirl book that feels more like the Batgirl book.
Mm.
So not exactly like the TV show, but definitely more separate from Superman, but still recognizable as she's Superman's cousin. I think that's important. I think bringing a Batwoman book back that feels gothic is really sort of important. Batgirl can stay exactly as it is, and I suspect it will. You know, I think looking at those characters that way, I think some of the characters that you mentioned, Mo, are not going to have a place.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they have a place, it'll be as supporting characters. Because I really see the Rebirth as being, it's going to be the big marquee characters. The ones that they think can sell. And maybe there'll be a few of the others, but...
How many books do you think is ideal for them to produce a month? Everybody.
50.
50?
But that doesn't necessarily mean 50 different titles.
No. 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 I get what you're saying. How about you?
I'd say that's probably the ballpark. And then, you know, and that would include, you know, weeklies and miniseries.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, miniseries have not been a good go for DC. It's just still not working. I don't know whether that's because they're easier to trade weight, or whether, like, I don't know why exactly they don't work. They don't sell, but they don't sell. Whether they feel disposable or whether they, you know, like I said, you can trade weight them. Yeah, I think that's probably a good spot. I mean, Marvel and Image are publishing about the same amount of items as DC does. They're all kind of in the same ballpark now.
I want it to be the new 42. Am I? No, the only one.
I don't know what the I don't know. I don't think there's an automatic correlation of fewer titles.
Let's go 37. Let's just have a random number. Like,
I've heard people say, like, you know, if there were 12 titles, then it would then everything would could be awesome. But if you went to 12, it's not like every book's going to suddenly go to 160,000 copies.
I know.
Like, you can't, like, the math just doesn't work. Like, yeah. I don't know where the...
I just want a weird number.
Where it falls.
Shelf space.
Okay, what about any villains? Is there any villains that you guys think, okay, I have an ideal vision of this villain, and here's a chance that they can refresh in this one to something that the people would like more, to connect a little more, that's a little more familiar? Is there any characters that are villains that you guys are looking at?
Okay, I have an answer here. Well, I don't have an answer to this question, so I'm going to ignore it.
You usually do. You usually do.
DCU, the villains, I don't have ones I really want to see right now. But I will answer the last question, is I'd like to see the integration of some Milestone characters. I'm really tired of...
They don't own Milestone anymore.
Sorry?
They don't own Milestone anymore.
They don't? Oh.
No, okay. Someone else is going to be publishing those characters.
In that case, I will say I want to see the integration of some minority characters and not just rebranding or reassigning races to existing characters.
It is weird to think Static Shock not with DCU. The rest of them, you know, whatever, but Static Shock should.
I actually now want to know who owns Milestone and how awesome that's going to be.
I hope it's
well. Milestone owns Milestone, and they always have. But they had a deal with DC. They have a deal with DC again. But the books are going to be published on one of the worlds of the 52, so they're going to be separate Earth M, sort of like Earth One books. They'll be on their own Earth. They're
so
one of the
basically what they were before.
Yeah, what they were originally. Yeah,
they're one of the seven unknown Earths.
Yeah.
Okay. So are you saying Worlds Collide didn't happen?
Oh, that was great, yeah. Man! Remember that Superman cover where the Marvel Milestone characters were in there? It was those little pieces, you know, you can take out and you can stick all over the cover. And
oh yeah,
create your own
Stickums cover.
Oh,
yeah.
The Stickums cover. They had that with the Milestone. That was great. And they also did one of those with Superman and Lobo. Oh, that was fun.
But man, also, like the Earth One books, the Milestone books are going to be bookstore graphic novels.
That's cool. I like that.
Yeah.
All right, I've always liked a lot of those characters. How about you guys then? Since Chris just decided to ignore the villains, how about you guys? Any villains that you think need a refreshing, and this is the opportunity to do it?
You know, I'm actually okay with most of the villains. I've liked what's been going on with the Joker. I've liked what's been going on with Lex Luthor. Captain Cold's always awesome. Maybe more of him, I guess, if nothing else. But yeah, I don't.
Brainiac for me hasn't quite worked in New 52. And I think certainly at the end of Convergence, they left that character kind of open for where we could go with him from then on.
Sure.
I'd like the Batman villains to get back to more of like a more difference in them. A lot of the way they've been portrayed is kind of samey. They're all crime lords. They're all, running their part, their chunk of Gotham, as opposed to, you know, capers. Two-Face has always been one of my favorite villains, so I'd like to see them play with him a bit. I think it's one that's always had so much potential that's only ever scratched the surface of.
I just want to see them start fresh with Professor Zoom now. Like, well. But yeah. Okay, excellent, guys. I don't know. I don't have anything else. We really covered everything that I wanted to talk about today, and this was so much fun. Just like I say, good old-fashioned comic talk. Everybody have a good time, and this is what we love doing, right?
Yeah, it was fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and I'm just fingers crossed now that this episode goes up before they announce what Rebirth is.
We'll probably get it up pretty quick, though. There's so much stuff going. There's just so much stuff happening over at We Talk Podcasts in general. We've been adding a lot of shows and stuff, so it's kind of fun. But we'll throw it. We'll wedge it in there, Keith, pretty quick. So any last things? I think we're OUT, but any last where We Talk Podcasts, and this is We Talk Comics on the We Talk Podcast Network. You can always get us TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, iTunes. Follow We Talk podcasts on Facebook, and we talk podcasts on Twitter. We all have our own individual Twitter feeds as well. And then Matt, anything else you guys want to promote before I throw it over to Matt? Is the real star of the show. We wouldn't be what we are if it wasn't for Comicosity. Even though 200 episodes, it would be 200 episodes with us just a bunch of foolish guys talking without the legitimacy you guys give us.
I don't know if that's true, but we certainly love you enough to nod our heads and go along with that. No, I just would say, you know, people keep looking out for Comicosity. We've just added a bunch of new reviewers who are quite frankly just excellent, and that's been really exciting for me. We have a lot of stuff coming up in the next few weeks. I actually am doing a really awesome interview in the next week that will be coming out in the weeks to follow. So, and my little tease for that is I've had to coordinate two creators who are 19 hours apart from me.
Wow.
And that is not easy. So
no. How many hours apart from you is Australia?
Well, that's a no-brainer. But what about who's on the other end? I guess it's a better question. Yeah. It's going to be great, and it'll be just one of many things to look forward to on comicosity.com.
I want to say that anyone coming to the Calgary Expo, keep an eye out, because we will likely be doing, hopefully be doing panels again at the Calgary Expo. We have the past couple of years, and unless they've finally come to their senses, we'll be doing them, one or two this year.
Oh, what did we do like last year? Like 74?
It felt like 74.
Yeah. So I think this year at least 70. But the difference is this year, you know how many I'll take part in? Zero. Zero. I'm never paneling again.
You're gonna cave and do the fantasy draft one again. I know it.
Ah.
we've had people are lining up wanting to do the script panel. There's tons of fantastic comics out. Lots of our friends have comics. Ryan Ferrier's new book, Kennel Blues.
Mm-hmm, Kennel Blues.
Check that out. Our pal Ed Brisson is starting his brand new classic Captain Canuck comic. Starts next month, I believe. Make sure to get that.
I think Matt's our target audience for that.
Well, if Matt's not reading Captain Canuck, I'll be really disappointed.
Sorry.
Oh, he let me down.
Damned America.
Ed loves that character like no other.
Not that I won't consider it, though. I'm way behind on like 100 different things.
Ed absolutely loves that character, and he's working with George Freeman, who we all think of as the... George came on in issue 4 of Captain Canuck. He's who we all think of as the original Captain Canuck artist. So that book's going to be great. And I'm excited to find out what Rebirth is.
Well, when Rebirth happens, the four of us will have to get back together and talk about it. And I would love it if it's like totally disappointing now, because that'd be hilarious. Like if it's completely underwhelming, like everything stays the same. We're just starting at number one with all the issues again. Everything's the same.
But I'll say this is, I don't know that would disappoint me. I'll say this is I'm one
just
of
the hype. Just compared to the hype. Fans,
but I'm not hyped yet. I want to know who the creators are. That's what's going to sell me on the book.
Oh.
Books.
All right. So, Matt, calm down. All right. We're done here. Bye, babies.